We do have battles.
Bring 120% every single time.
Everything's a work in progress.
Everybody on the team loves to play basketball with somebody.
Hello, and welcome back to The Phone Booth, the Georgetown Voices podcast dedicated completely to Georgetown basketball. I'm your host, Tyler Parikh, and I'm joined today by veterans of the booth, our assistant podcast editor, Nick Gavio.
How's it going?
And our halftime sports editor, Jorge Deneve.
What's up, everybody?
Boys, it's been a while since we've done this. The Hoyas have played four games since we last met. After beating Butler, they went on the road and beat DePaul by a score of 76-73. They then lost a heartbreaker in overtime at home to Seton Hall, 68-66. Went on the road to Villanova and lost what was a close game. They had come back. We'll talk about that later, but they had come back and ended up losing by 75-64. And then, most recently, a exceptional victory over a team who had beaten them earlier this season in Marquette. The Hoyas came out and, quite frankly, dominated the Golden Eagles from start to finish, winning that game 80-62. I want to start by talking really about the Seton Hall game, because this is, when you're looking at a team trying to make an NCAA tournament push, this is one that really stings. The Hoyas, it was a back-and-forth game throughout. The second half featured quite a few lead changes, and Georgetown was up by 2 points with a minute 25 left. Game was tied by Angel Delgado with a minute and 5 left for Seton Hall. Hoyas take the lead again on LJ Peek's jumper. Seton Hall then comes down and ties it up with 36 seconds left, and Georgetown calls a timeout, unable to get a shot to go. Seton Hall actually came down in the last final seconds of regulation, made a layup, but Marcus Derrickson took a bold charge. It takes a lot to take a charge in those final minutes of the game. But going into overtime, Seton Hall, and they exchanged buckets, but Seton Hall finally pulled away on Madison Jones's two free throws with 4 seconds left. Interestingly, the Hoyas did call a timeout in regulation with 30 seconds left to talk over how they would do it, and JT3 elected not to use the timeout 4 seconds left after those free throws. LJP got a shot off at the buzzer. It actually, after extensive review, did not get off before the buzzer, so the Hoyas dropped by a total of 68-66. Important stats in this game, the team gave up 26 points and 17 rebounds to Angel Delgado, but they got contributions from LJ Peek and Rodney Pryor scoring 18 and 13 respectively. But as we've seen throughout the season, when they struggle to find a third scoring option, which they did in this game, the team doesn't usually come out on top. Their next leading scorer was Marcus Derrickson with 9 points and Jesse Govan had 8. When you struggle to find that third scorer, the team hasn't done well. What did you see in this game that was somewhat? It was both an encouraging and a discouraging game in the same way. What's your biggest takeaway?
I mean, to start out, I thought that this, except for Delgado, they actually played pretty good defense. You know, you let him, I mean, 26 and 17, that's insane. But he's easily their best player. He played 40 minutes. But other than him, I mean, Kadeem Carrington had 16, you know, which is kind of a big number for him. But other than that, I thought their defense was pretty solid. You know, again, they're just getting killed by the foul bug. You know, that's been a theme all year. Georgetown just can't defend and not foul. And I think that, you know, that didn't have a huge effect in this game, but that's just been contributing to some of their losses throughout the whole season.
Two overtime games at home in Big East play against teams where if they win, that helps their tournament push. Like, going into the game, Seton Hall was first four out. The Hoyas were next four out. So it would have been big. That could come back to bite them at the end of the season. And, I mean, also shooting 1 of 19 from three-point land on a team with Rodney Pryor, who is a lights-out shooter normally, LJ Peek, who can shoot the three, and then two big men that love shooting, Marcus Derrickson and Jesse Govan as well. It's a big part of the Hoyas game, and it just wasn't falling.
Absolutely. You're not going to win many games shooting 5.3% from three-point range, for those of you keeping track at home. But what is encouraging is you shoot 5.3% from three, and you're able, I don't want to say able to only lose by two, but if there's if there's anything that's encouraging, it's that you shoot, you make only 1 3-pointer and end up losing the game by just 2 points. Mm-hmm. But they had a quick turnaround. They had just 2 days, 2 to 3 days after the Seton Hall loss, the team had to travel to number 2 Villanova, playing on campus in the pavilion. And the first probably 28, 29 minutes of this game, I'll give them the first 4 minutes of the first half. For about 25 minutes of this game, the Hoyas looked dead in the water. Villanova was getting anything it wanted, and specifically Josh Hart was getting anything he wanted. He went off in the first half, scored 17 points in the first half, and Villanova was cruising. But in the second half, Villanova, just for context, shot 63% in the first half, including 6 threes and 3 of 3 from the three-point line. Georgetown shot 44%, which is not a bad mark by any standard, but when the other team is shooting 63%, it's difficult to stay in that game. But the second half, the Hoyas, within a 7-minute stretch, came back from a 17-point deficit to bring the game within 2 with just 2 minutes left. Unfortunately for the team, they were unable to complete the comeback bid, started fouling late, and Josh Hart found his groove once again in the second half after being held scoreless for the entire half. He hit a big 3 with just over a minute 30 left to pretty much put the game out of reach. In terms of this comeback effort at Villanova, obviously it's not ideal. If you can get a win over the number 2 team in the country at their arena, that's obviously probably enough to put you in the tournament. But at the same time, we saw this team battle back from adversity, especially missing the contributions of Trey Campbell and Bradley Hayes, who played limited minutes in this game. From the Villanova game, obviously they played terrible for 25 minutes of the game, but they also played some of their best basketball for, you know, the other 15. What do you take away from this game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that comeback was huge. Being down 17, getting it within 2, I mean, against the number 2 team in the nation, on the road, on campus, that's a pretty crazy performance. You know, I think this is just another step of the theme we've been seeing with Georgetown all year, which is that they always start slow, and then they kind of get reinvigorated, and the early deficit is just too big to overcome. And this is just another example of that. You know, that 7-minute stretch was really good. They were playing good defense. They were hustling all over the place. They were getting a few offensive rebounds. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know if you could play a better 7-minute stretch, and it still wasn't enough. And then, you know, I mean, you know Nova's going to hit some of those shots. And they, near the end of the game, they finally started hitting them. Hart nailed that dagger, which was huge with a minute 30 left. And but it was definitely still encouraging to see that.
Yeah, Nick, I think you hit it right on the head. Last year's Georgetown team, Big East tournament, plays Villanova in Madison Square Garden. Things start going wrong, and they rolled over. This team didn't do that. They fought back. So just that they are willing to fight back. And we saw it a little bit in the Arkansas State game. Similar game, started slow, but fought back. This is a team that is willing to fight back, with the exception of a couple games in Maui. But they're a better team when they struggle than last year's team was, which is why I think they're making this late push late in the season.
Absolutely. And the good thing for Georgetown is they have another chance at Nova on March 4th in their final game of the season. They've proven that they can play with the number 2 team in the country, and perhaps with the home court advantage, they'll be able to finish the deal and get that win that they need to get in the NCAA tournament. But as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, the Marquette win on Saturday. You two were there covering the game. The team won 80-62. The big three that we have talked about of Govan, Pryor, and Pete combined for 63 points, which is more than Marquette on its own. Second time this season they've done that. They did it against Creighton. They did it against Marquette, and the result is a resounding victory for the Blue and Gray. What stood out to you guys in that one?
Like, this game was just crazy because, like, Georgetown was just so good. Like, it was almost unbelievable. And, like, they shot 54% from the field. They made 6 for 12 three-pointers. They got 8 offensive rebounds, which is a pretty good number. Govan got 5 offensive rebounds on his own. This was a game where they were, like, the team was all over the place. You know, there was a point, and I remember this play, where I think Georgetown was up by about 15, and there was a loose ball going out of bounds near the, like, announcers, and LJ Peake, like, dives for it, and he couldn't keep it in, but he dove with them up 15, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, this team is actually, like, showing the effort that you would expect throughout the whole season. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, you get 63 points from three players. That's crazy. And that's what Georgetown needs. They need those three to step up. And I don't know if they've, if all three of them at the same time have stepped up this much. And I think that really showed with the team's success.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most complete game Georgetown has played all season. The crowd was into it, I think, towards the end of the game. Jagan Mosley had a shot fake in the corner and drove, and the entire student section went nuts because he got the guy flying through the air. Also, speaking on the effort, offensive rebounding-wise, at the end of the first half, and this is something JT3 mentioned in his press conference, Caleb Johnson misses a free throw. Rodney Pryor gets the offensive rebound, misses his putback. Jagan Mosley gets that offensive rebound and puts it in. I mean, we didn't see that very much from Georgetown with their rebounding struggles, but they're getting there now. They're putting it together, and Marquette had no answers. LJ Peak, Jesse Govan, and Rodney Pryor could do whatever they wanted, and the team just flowed from it.
Yeah, and I mean, another quick thing is that, you know, they played really good defense and they stayed out of foul trouble. You know, I mean, a lot of their key players still played, even though they won by a big margin, still played a good amount of minutes. And, you know, no one had more than three fouls in that mm-hmm. game. So really good defense, really good offense, really good all-around game.
And, you know, as much as JT3 has been criticized throughout the season for some of his lineup decisions, I think one decision that he's made that has proved to be just enormous for the Hoyas is the starting of Jonathan Wilmore, who got his first start of the season against Creighton at home on January 25th, and since then the Hoyas are 4-2 and are looking like they have a good chance to make the NCAA tournament. His insertion in the lineup has been huge. We'll see how it pays off the final five games of the season. But speaking of the NCAA tournament, these final five games are ride or die for the Hoyas. Not necessarily that they need to win all of them, but they definitely need to have some work cut out for them in terms of making the field right now. Joe Lenardi in his latest bracketology put the Hoyas in the next four out. I believe they were like the eighth team out, so they have quite some work cut out for them. But they do have huge chances to buffer their resume. They have a game in Omaha at Creighton, who they've beaten earlier in the season.
Yep.
And they have a game against number two Villanova at home to end the season. What do you guys think it's going to take for this team to get into the field?
I mean, I think you go 4-1 throughout these games, the one loss likely to Nova. I think you're pretty set. But I don't know if this team would do that. I think that this Creighton game is really massive, because if you lose this game, you'll probably need to beat Villanova in the last game of the year, which I think this team can do, but that's just a lot of pressure, especially for the last game. And then you might have to go and clean up a game in the Big East tournament. Obviously, I don't think they can lose to DePaul or St. John's under any condition. I think that would be a really big blow and would require, obviously, them to sweep the other three games, which I don't know. Even then, they might get pushed out of the field. But I think 4-1, I would be pretty confident. 3-2, definitely some more work to do.
Yeah, I mean, 4-1 is probably ideal. If it's 3-2, you have to at least make the Big East championship game, maybe even win it. So the easy way to do that is 4-1. Really, you have to beat Creighton.
I think the Creighton game definitely sets the stage for the rest of the rest of the season. Should they lose, it's funny because last year the team was in a position where I think there were like 10 games left and people were saying, well, if they can just run the table, they have a chance at making the NCAA tournament. And that went down in absolute flames. I believe they lost 11 of their last 12. Obviously, this team has proven that they can put together winning streaks throughout the season. But if there was ever a time to do it, it would be now. I'm kind of on the train where they can go 3-2. If they beat Villanova, all they would need to do is win one game in the Big East tournament. I think that's where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go 3-2 and one of those wins is not Villanova, I would agree with you, Jorge. Yeah. I think
if they beat Villanova, everything changes.
Yeah.
Another thing you also have to consider is the fact that in front of them on the bubble right now are both Marquette and Seton Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So Marquette's a team they just beat, and I don't know, this was late last week, so Lunardi might have updated with Marquette dropping. But I know Seton Hall right now is in the field ahead of them. And, you know, that's just another team. That is a big game because, you know, you beat them, they probably drop out, and you might bump in there.
Well, Seton Hall is playing Creighton
Seton Hall is a crazy schedule.
Seton Hall has, just for context, Seton Hall has Creighton, Villanova, Xavier all at home. Then they travel to DePaul, play Georgetown at home, and then travel to Butler. If Seton Hall has its work cut out for them, but at the same time, they also have the best chance out of anybody in the Big East to bolster their resume. So that's something to watch out for.
Double-edged sword.
Do I think Seton Hall can play consistent enough to win three out of those six? No, quite frankly, but I don't. But they can. There are four of them are at home, and I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that they're gonna beat DePaul.
Yeah.
So in that case, they need
not a hot take.
Yeah, not exactly. Not what we want on the booth, but we'll see. We'll see how the rest of the season plays out. Marquette, look, they have a win over Villanova under their belts, but I don't
Marquette's
think
sliding.
I think they're sliding, and Providence has its work cut out for it as well. They don't really have any signature wins on the season, although they did just beat Butler, a home win against Butler, but they're going to need a little bit more, especially when they're competing with teams like Georgetown who have wins against Oregon under their belt.
Providence and Xavier are playing Wednesday night, so that'll be a big game.
Yeah, so we will see how this turns out. Thank you guys for joining me again on the booth. I look forward to having you both here on Selection Sunday. hopefully with some cheer.
Some good news.
Ideally, we'd still be in New York covering the Big East tournament on Selection Sunday. A guy can dream. we'll see how that goes. But thank you guys for being on. It's been a pleasure as always. And we will now bring on Bobby Bancroft of Casual Hoya, who joined us last time to talk about some Big East bracketology. We are now joined by Bobby Bancroft, a return special guest who was with us last time. He is an AP freelancer and a contributor for Casual Hoya, who's been covering the Hoyas since the day, been following the team since the days of Alonzo Mourning, been covering the team for 7 years. Bobby, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing a lot better than Arsenal after earlier today.
Yeah, not the greatest of days for our pals across the Atlantic, but this weekend was a good weekend for the Georgetown men's basketball team as they took down Marquette 80-62. And something we talked about last time was the big three on Georgetown, Rodney Pryor, LJ Peek, and Jesse Govan combining for 63 points in this game. Their contributions outscored all of Marquette's team. And we talked about it last time. When these three perform, the team does well. How crucial is that going to be going into this final stretch of the season?
Yeah, I think it's everything, and you know, it's almost like this past outburst by Jesse was sort of it wasn't even really planned. It seemed like Bradley Hayes got hurt, and he probably played a little bit more minutes early on than he might have, and as a result, it worked out Georgetown's way. I think something we talked about last time, and that JT3 is better with a shorter bench, and this team goes. You know, I think a lot of the. This team goes with the big three. We talked about it last time, and that fact remains with five games left.
Absolutely, and we had seen the team earlier in that week go to the Pavilion on Villanova's campus. They came back from 17 down at one point to bring it to within two with just over 2 minutes left, basically on the back of Rodney Pryor and LJ Peek. Peek scored 18 points in the second half of that game. You and I talked about it after the game in the Facebook Live on Casual Hoya, but what do you think that game will significantly impact how the team approaches the rest of the season? Not necessarily significantly impact, but are there things in that game that you think the team could take away and use going into the final stretch of the season?
I mean, obviously coming back in a hostile environment, we were obviously both there, is something that you can take. There's no moral victories in sports, or it's very results oriented, obviously, but I think that when you play the number one team I guess they're number two right now. They've been number one a lot. You play them, you know, eye to eye for 38 or so minutes, even with the ups and the downs. You can take something from that. And I think that's where they go going forward. But I think in that game, we saw the reason why they got down and the reason why they got back. A lot of different lineups, a lot of weird stuff. Jesse Govan and Marcus Derrickson didn't play for the first 8 minutes of the second half. Villanova didn't do a lot to separate, even they're up by a lot at halftime. Govan and Derrickson come back, and obviously Peek and Pryor were more instrumental on the score sheet, but I think once you get Govan in the game, he's someone that has to be guarded, and that's a big deal for Georgetown.
Yeah, and we had talked about it after the game, but one of the things that has plagued the team of years past, and certainly isn't helping this year, is the fact that they foul so much. We talked about it after the Villanova game. They had brought themselves to within two, and then the next two possessions they foul Villanova. Villanova gets free throws off of it and eventually pulls away. But the team also struggles to defend guards. They struggled to contain Josh Hart in the first half. He exploded for Villanova, finished the game with 25 yep. points there. When especially in the NCAA, we've seen teams make deep runs in March with good guard play. We've seen it with UConn the past couple of years. Kentucky has done it as well. Is it at all concerning that this team struggles so mightily to defend good guards?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at them, the biggest thing is they can't defend consistently without fouling, and we've seen that time and time again. The Marquette game over the week, free throws are about even. I really think, and this isn't, you know, I'm not watching every game, every place around the country, but we've seen Georgetown play, you know, teams like Oregon, Creighton, Butler, Villanova, even though they didn't win it. If they can play even on free throws, they can literally beat and stay with anyone in the country. I don't think that's hyperbole. They've got two great wings for college basketball. No one's denying that. And as long as they can stay, and I'm not even saying they have to win it, but they have to be in the mix, be in that range, shooting, and you know, giving up free throw attempts, and that's I think along with Jesse's contribution, that's the key to the season.
Absolutely, and you talked about those two key wins. They have the win over Oregon in the Maui Invitational, and they also have a win at Hinkle Fieldhouse over Butler. They have wins over Creighton. And we've been hearing this a lot. They don't really have a bad loss this season. Obviously, Arkansas State isn't the greatest of losses. But other than that,
have a lot of them.
Yeah, they have lost a lot. But what do you think it's going to take for this team to get into the NCAA tournament mix? Well, they're already in the mix, but to actually get into the field.
You know, I know I've told you this, you know, privately off the air. Is I really don't like being a hot take guy and, oh, because this next game is the biggest game, blah, blah, blah. When you talk about Georgetown having five games left and they need to go 4-1 or 3-2, well, if you sort of say, look, beating Villanova is really hard, that basically means you have to win your next four to go 4-1. And that starts at Creighton. And as we know, Creighton's pretty good. They're not at full strength. We didn't see them at full strength of Verizon Center, but they're still a really good team. So, I mean, they have to. I think they have to go 4-1, 3-2. Now, I did do a little research. I'm not sure if you're familiar. Since the Big East started in 1979, we've seen five teams. Most recently, Connecticut in 2012, have had a record of a conference record under 500, and get an at-large selection. So when we start talking about 3-2, that puts Georgetown at 8-10, which obviously is under 500. So it seems wild to me that that would do it, but I think it might if it includes beating Villanova.
Absolutely, and I think with the strength of the Big East this year, obviously the injuries to Edmund Sumner and Maurice Watson have hurt Creighton and Xavier, but at one point this league looked like it could stack up with basically anybody outside the ACC. Four teams in the top 25 consistently throughout the season. And I think that helps Georgetown, especially when you look at, like, if they can go 500 in the Big East with a win over Oregon under their belt, that's a pretty decent resume compared to the other teams on the bubble. Joe Lunardi recently had the team in his next four out in his latest round of bracketology. But as you mentioned, there's a few chances left for the team to get a quality win against Oregon or a win on the road in Omaha, where Creighton is one of the most dangerous teams in the nation at home. But I think one of the games that can't be understated in its importance is the game at Seton Hall. It's the penultimate regular season game for the team on February 28th. They lost a heartbreaker at home to Seton Hall in overtime. And assuming they take care of business against DePaul and St. John's, that could be the game that really makes or breaks their tournament case. Do you feel that's the case?
Well, when you start looking around, if you say they can only lose one more game, so you kind of have to pick which one that is. And that's why I said I don't like saying that this game at Creighton is the biggest game of the year. But if they lose this game, then they basically have to sweep, right? So then the game against the Pirates becomes huge. If they steal a game in Omaha, I think that you'll find on Monday morning they'll be in everybody's mock bracket. So then the key to that is staying in the mock bracket. So basically, you can only lose to Villanova or you can only lose to Creighton. And since Creighton game is first, you get something under, you know, get it under your belt, you got something to play with. It's hard to see a path where they can lose both of those games and get in without winning the Big East tournament. So, yes, to answer your question the long way, beating Seton Hall on the road is enormous. They have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most people would agree that the Big East will probably get six teams into the NCAA tournament this year. The four locks are going to be Villanova, Creighton, Xavier, and Butler. And then it seems as though Marquette, Seton Hall, Providence, and Georgetown are all vying for those final two spots. Georgetown has already dropped the season series to Providence. They were swept by them, and they face a sweep by Seton Hall. Do you think being swept by those two teams would make a big difference in the committee's decisions when, say, they're looking at the Big East? Well, I don't know if the committee probably doesn't look at the conference and decide who gets in, but if they're weighing a team like Providence versus Seton Hall, do you think if both of those teams were to sweep Georgetown, they would get a consideration over the team?
Now, normally I would think that would be the case, and that's the way I would do it. If I say, look, these two teams are even, they played twice, and this team won twice, it seems like it's hard to give it to the team that lost twice. With Providence, it looks like Georgetown, by every sort of metric, is just, they're just an uptick better than them. That's not the case with Seton Hall. So I think they can survive, and they're going to have to because they're done playing Providence. I think they can survive being swept by Providence, but clearly they have to split with Seton Hall after losing to them in overtime. And there's actually some historical backing to this. You can, in 2002, Syracuse and Georgetown both finished 9-7 in the Big East. Georgetown swept them, and Syracuse went to the tournament. So it has happened. There's things like that have happened. So you can survive it, even though I disagree with it, but they can't get swept by Seton Hall.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think Marquette played themselves out of the tournament against Georgetown this past weekend.
Absolutely. So assuming the team goes 3-2, I feel that it's likely that the team will go 3-2 in the final five games, which means basically you'd have to win a game in the Big East tournament. Now, when it comes to seeding for the Big East tournament, do you think it's advantageous for them to be like a 6 seed as opposed to a 5 seed so that they avoid Villanova at all costs until the final? Like, do you think the seeding will play any sort of factor in terms of how they approach the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, tonight we've got two games going. We got two games tonight that are pretty big. If people want a scoreboard watch, if this podcast gets out on February 15th, Providence, they're 5-8 with Georgetown. They're playing Xavier. You're going to be rooting for the Musketeers. Seton Hall and Creighton play tonight. If Seton Hall loses, they'd be 5-8, which is tied with Georgetown. I think it's pretty important. You know, there's different teams have different matchups. And right now, Georgetown, even though they're right on the bubble, they're actually in 9th place in the Big East. And, you know, that 8-9 game is against Providence, who's just had their numbers since the new Big East was formed for whatever reason. So Providence is a hard team for them to play, and clearly playing Villanova in the quarterfinals at noon is going to be a tall order. So I think it's absolutely imperative. Maybe Georgetown doesn't need to get into the 5 or 6 range, but I think it's pretty important to get to 7. DePaul's locked in at 10, so if you get at 7, you avoid Providence, which it sounds crazy that you want to avoid them, but you do. And then if you're 7, assuming you don't lose to DePaul, you go in on Thursday night, you're going to play either Creighton, Xavier, or Butler, and they've had pretty good success against Creighton and Butler. So I think if you're Georgetown, you take that.
Absolutely. And so it looks as though the team has a pretty favorable schedule compared to other teams that they're battling with in terms of the rest of the season. With DePaul and St. John's still to play, but they do have these two big matchups at Creighton and against Villanova. Do you think, obviously we saw the team play well at the Pavilion for times, at times, especially in the second half, but Jay Wright talked about in the post-game press conference how his team goes through these lulls when they're playing with leads and they don't necessarily have the focus at all times. Do you expect his team to come out any better at the Verizon Center, or do you tip your hat in favor of Georgetown in that one?
I think it'll be a closer game. I don't think Villanova will, you know, obviously there's no crowd to feed off of, which is a problem for both teams sometimes. Georgetown has that problem as well, feeding off the crowd at Verizon. But, you know, they played them close last year. I think they lost by 5, if I'm not mistaken, 5 or 6. I would expect a similar type game. I see no reason why they couldn't put up a fight in Verizon Center on that last day. Now, Villanova will likely have clinched the Big East by then, but they'll probably be fighting for a 1 seed, so they'll definitely still be playing for something. If Georgetown gets to that game, let's say they go 3-1 of their next 4, and it'll basically be an NCAA play-in type situation. So if you can't get up for that at home, I don't think that there's much cause, you know, hoping that they make it to the tournament at that point. I would expect Georgetown to have one of their better games of the season in that home finale.
Absolutely, and you and I had talked about this on the way up to Villanova, but Villanova, since the reformulation of the Big East, has gone 16-2 every year in league play. Assuming they don't lose before that Georgetown game, they'll be sitting at 15-2, and if history has anything to say about it, that doesn't seem to favor the Hoyas, as Villanova obviously has a nose for finding its way to 16-2 in the conference. But Bobby, I want to thank you for coming on. Do you have any alternative facts for the Georgetown basketball team? This is our newest segment. We're talking about alternative facts. Anything come to mind?
Alternative facts?
Yeah, if you don't have any, that's fine. But I mean, we're just all about hot takes here, looking for alternative facts for the phone booth.
I'm not really sure. I wish I'd had a little bit of a heads up on this. Alternative facts would be, it's really important for the 3 guys on the cover of the media guide to play well going forward.
That's a very good alternative fact. For those who don't know, Isaac Copeland is alongside, I believe it's Bradley and LJ. Bradley Hayes and LJ Peak on the media guide. So the 3 of them definitely need to play well to close out the season if the Hoyas hope to make the NCAA tournament. Bobby, thank you again for joining us. Always a pleasure having you on, and we'll see how the rest of the season turns out.
It'll be great in a couple weeks to do an NCAA tournament preview that includes Georgetown. I hope to be a part of that.
We'll get you on immediately after Selection Sunday. That sound good?
That sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you, Bobby. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. See you.
Thank you again, Bobby, for joining us, and I'd like to thank Nick and Jorge once again for coming into the booth with me. If you would like to follow us on any sort of social network, you can follow me on Twitter at Tyler_Paree, that's P-E-A-R-R-E. You can follow Bobby on Twitter at Bobby Bancroft, B-O-B-B-Y-B-A-N-C-R-O-F-T. You can follow Casual Hoya, who Bobby is a major contributor for, at Casual Hoya. On Twitter, you can follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Gavio, and Jorge, as usual, is still not on Twitter, and we will get him on that. But thank you all again for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next time.